Like the second he, I read that he was like, "You think this is a mansion?" I was like, "Okay.
Yeah,
Okay.
I do.
That's enough, actually, out of you. So thank you, sir." Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Hate Spinnerbait, the podcast where we hate spinnerbait, but we love. Oh, shit, I lost it again. Fudge Ripple from Squeeze Serve.
Yes. Oh, I wish I could be eating it right now, to be honest. I always love a
It's
sweet treat.
it sounds delicious, and I myself always love a sweet treat as well.
Yes. Love an ice cream shop, especially in a cute little beach town. Sign me the hell up.
Oh,
100%.
sounds magical, honestly. Uh-oh.
Anyways, I guess we should probably start with
Oh.
the Yeah, then I just took us on a whole tangent.
Hi, I'm Michael Ann. With me, as always, is Bethany. How
Hi
are you?
everyone. I am good. Let me tell y'all. Okay, I told Michael Ann I have a couple of funny stories at the top before we dive into the Moon and More chapters. What are we reading? 12 and 13 today? Yes, 12 and 13. Hello to everyone just listening to us. We love you. Hello, everyone who's watching us on the YouTube now. Hi, we're here. Subscribe, like, tell your friends. They can see our
Yes.
faces. Now, I'm already in the Halloween spirit, so I put on a Beetlejuice shirt today. Okay,
Love
so
that.
let me break down two things. One, was very crafty this weekend, speaking of, and I went to Marshall's yesterday, and the Halloween just got me. Like, I just started buying Halloween and fall decor this weekend, and I have zero regrets, okay? I was like, I'm gonna paint my nails darker color. Like, I'm ready to be in fall right now. I have the pumpkin candles. I am ready, okay? Call me a basic millennial, but I'm ready for it. So that's not really the story, but I'm crafting something that I'm very excited about. I can't wait to share with all of you. None of you care, probably. I think Michael Ann will
I
get a kick
care.
out of it. Thank you. Thank you for caring. Some craft, I've been very crafty, and I think it should be going up tomorrow. So hopefully on this next episode, y'all will kind of see it in the background. Anywho, the stories though. One, I have never felt cooler in my life. As y'all know, I work with a lot of Gen Z girlies. And today I had a Chappell Roan song stuck in my head, and I was like, oh my God, y'all, like they're so damn catchy. I like keep getting her song stuck in my head. And all of these Gen Zers were like, who is that? And I was like, how am I more Gen Z than you are? Like, this is the
Did you
Gen Z
know?
icon of the summer. Like, how do you not know who she is? And people were like, no. So then I went around polling people in my office to be like, hi, who knows her? And only a couple of people did. And I was like, what is wrong with y'all? So I told them all they have homework, and hopefully they'll go listen and come back with high praise, which they probably will because she's great. But yeah, can you imagine a bunch of Gen Z ladies and like two people knew who she was? And I was like, what is your TikTok algorithm? Like, what what is your social media experience? Because it's clearly not mine.
I was gonna say, like, are they straight? But like, you're straight. And also, I feel
Yeah.
like she's broken the bounds of like, this is a queer pop
Right.
artist. Like, she's like the nation's pop artist now, which I
Yes.
have like really mixed feelings about. Can I just say that? To go on
You can say
a to go
that.
on
This is a
a
safe space. You
side.
can say whatever you want.
Thank you. I love Chappell Roan. It's been so fun to watch her explode over the past few months. Especially because, like, we don't have a lot of artists that are openly pop artists that are like openly queer and very popular, except for Taylor Swift, but she's not openly queer, but let's be honest. And so I love that. But part of me too, as like a queer person, is I'm like, man, that's ours.
Yeah,
But
you're like, man,
it,
we
like,
have this
in
one.
particular, not like, regular people, but in particular, an example I'm thinking of, I've been watching Love Island a lot, which I finished it. So if anybody else has watched Love Island US this season, message me because god damn.
She has thoughts.
But they played Chappell Roan
Yeah.
multiple times during this
Wow,
season. And
really?
I was like, this is the straightest show on
Love
television.
Island is probably the straightest show on television. You're not wrong about
Like, they had a Chappell Roan song playing while like two of the most annoying people who are in a relationship were
Like
arguing for like
super
800th time.
heterosexual. Yeah.
Yes, and I was like, excuse
You're like,
me.
oh, that's a little strange.
You
The
guys don't deserve
one,
Chappell, but also get your bag, you know what I mean?
yeah, exactly. I The one thing, I mean, I'm loving her meteoric rise, the fact that, like, she is becoming a quote-unquote household name, although apparently to none of my Gen Z people that I'm like, well, y'all, you're supposed to know that. I'm not supposed to know this. You're supposed to know this. But anyways, so I love that she's getting some recognition and that she is, you know, becoming a big name and whatever. But of course, the one thing I hate, which is only something we do to women, only something we do to women, is that, of course, if a new, you know, girly pop is entering the sphere, we have to be like, well, this person, and like, we can finally put this person to rest, and like, this person, and I'm like, why is it always a competition? Like, why can't we have multiple nice things? Because, you know what? I love pop music, and I want more women in pop music and women of, you know, again, a bunch of different ethnicities, races, you know, sexual orientation. I want them all. Like, I want some variety in my pop artist. Okay. And like, why does it have to be one or the other? So I'm like, I'm already getting a little like negative, like, this is what you're waiting for. And we can finally put like Taylor Swift to rest, or like Taylor Swift wishes she was as good as this. And it's like, why? We never do this to men. It's never like when a male art, like, we're never like comparing The Weeknd to Bruno Mars or something. You know what I mean? Like, we're never like, oh, well, now that this person is out, we can finally put this person to rest. Or I'm like, why can't you like both? Like, why can't you enjoy, if you like pop music, why would you not enjoy other pop music? Like, I don't understand. So anyways,
I don't understand that at all. Not like, what? And I'm sorry, but everybody needs to cut the shit with this, like, Taylor Swift's got to go, Taylor Swift this, Taylor Swift that. There were 40,000 people outside of her show in Munich sitting on the ground for doing 3.5 hours.
Effing lights for Marjorie. And you're telling me, like, it's on a whole, it's a different level. Like, you can't, no. It's never going to be over. Like, she has clearly made her mark. She is going to be, I know, still piss people off, but she is Beatles status now. Like, she's going to be someone that people are listening to talking about for a long time, for forever. Yes. I can't imagine the Beatles ever not being in, like, some people that people know, you know? So right. I'm like, I don't know. Her career has lasted this long. She is still number one on the charts. Like, I don't know why we're all just, like, waiting for it to end. And I'm like, it's not. Like, even if she's not as popular as she is currently one day, it's never going to end. Like, she's never not going to be part of the culture zeitgeist. And I don't know why I'm like, just accept it, y'all. Just accept it.
I know.
We've won. I'm sorry.
Yeah. She's too good.
She's just, too good. I also have another thought. I thought, this is so, I know this is Destined to Tuesday, y'all. And like, I haven't even gotten to my other story. My other story is like not even as good anymore. So I don't know. We might just save that other one to chaos Thursday, because it's funny, but it's like not as good as like what this conversation is, I feel like. But can I just say, I have another thought for all those people being like, I want Taylor Swift to say this about this or this about this, because again, they think she is the most powerful person in the world. And I'm not saying that she doesn't have influence. She does. She absolutely does. When she put out that post saying like, hey, everyone remember to register to vote, a bunch of people registered to vote. Like, she is powerful.
Yeah.
But also, again, that takes the agency away from people. Again, like, a lot of Taylor Swift fans are grown-ass adults who have our own brains and our own opinions and can do good in the world without her telling us. Like, I pay attention to the world around me. I don't need her to tell me. Again, I'd like to think that I'm following someone who's a good person and cares about, you know, human needs and peace on earth and all that jazz. And I do. Like, I wouldn't follow her if I thought that she had very different interests and you know, beliefs that I do. But this whole, like, the way that people immediately, when Kamala Harris announced that she was running for office, when the Swifties for Harris thing started, and people, and I was like, we can organize without needing to be instructed. Like you clearly, like, her fan base isn't just powerful. Like, people literally act like we're lemmings. Like, we only will do something if she tells us. And I was like, this clearly proves that the connections we have made from being Taylor Swift fans, we can mobilize and we can do things. We can, you know, do good for the world and whatnot, like, without needing to be specifically told. So I'm just like over that. Like, she needs to tell us everything that we think and do. Like, it is great if people with a big following and a high profile do go out and speak about important issues, but I don't think it is necessarily necessary when you have a fan base as large as hers for them to mobilize on something. And I just feel like this proves that a little bit. And that is my thoughts on that. Thank you. Good day.
Thank you. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I definitely understand what you're saying. Like, the Swifties for Kamala are, or Swifties for Harris, is it the last name? I actually didn't even know this was a thing. And somebody was like, oh yeah, I just went out with Swifties for Harris. And I was like, what the fuck is that? I'm not on Twitter. And I'm old, but yeah, I love, yeah, we can definitely organize on our own. Like, you know, obviously Swifties have made a huge, huge impact. I do think though, it would be, it's not like necessary. Like my like love of her isn't like relying on this part of her life, but like, right. It would be really nice, especially for like her younger fans who,
yeah,
this is their first election and they're just like, meh, whatever. Or they're like, my parents vote for Republicans, so I vote for Republican. Like it might be helpful to get the younger vote by, and I think it would just be like nice for somebody who's so like pro women power to be like, hey,
Kamala. And I think honestly that she will. I mean, she made posts about the Biden Harris ticket before, and she has spoken, you know, very favorably about her in the past, like when she did the VP debate, you know, in the last election. So I don't think it's out of the realm for her to say something, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, I would foresee that coming, honestly, probably in the next couple of months. But I also, like, I sometimes think that no matter what, like the other day when I was like, oh man, like people are always like asking a lot of celebrities, which I know it's like, boo hoo, Bethany, they're like billionaires and they have private jets or whatever. Like, I'm not saying that she doesn't live a privileged life. Okay. I'll just make that clear. And again, this isn't just like about her in general, just like in every public figure, like you just have to like it's a lot to just all the time be on and have to say every thought and whatever that you feel about every single matter in the world. It's a lot.
Yeah.
But the other thing I was thinking of is I was like, sometimes no matter what you say, people who believe a certain thing are going to interpret it the way they want to. Because I just saw a family friend post something with the lyrics from, you know, But Daddy, I Love Him. And it was an overall sweet post. It really didn't have much to do with God, to be honest. But it was, you know, talking about like something, blah, blah, whatever. And then she was talking about her children. And so she used the like wild joy, wild boy kind of like, you know, whatever lyric. And then said something about like God has a plan or whatever. And I'm like, oh, you don't get what that song is about, do you? Yeah. So like, no matter what, certain people are going to interpret what they want out of things. And I mean, that goes both ways, you know? Yeah. But I was like, have you seen that song performed on tour? Have you listened to it? Because this is very much about like anti-religion. And then for you to make a post quoting that exact song and then say something about God having a plan, I was like, yikes.
I get like a full body like thrill and excitement when I think about that Eras Tour performance. Like,
that's so good.
The first time I saw it in Sweden, no big deal. I was like losing my freaking mind. And I just ever since I've been like, oh my God, the imagery. But yeah, I know you
would quote that song. And then I was like,
yeah, people are so, like, people will just think what they want to think, or they'll interpret the art like the way they want it to be, you know, whatever. But yeah, I mean, we do kind of put a lot on celebrities, and specifically it's like we put a lot on Taylor Swift, and you know, she gets a lot of like, you should be doing this, you should be doing this, but like, we don't really give that same energy to other famous people who don't say anything and do anything. Like, it is very like, I mean, people want to hate her, so they will make any excuse in the entire world to hate
like
her.
I am very involved in the Ed Sheeran sphere as well, I guess.
Yes.
And let me tell you, no one is ever asking. I never see people commenting asking about him to speak out about certain matters or to do this or to do that or put his money into this and whatever. And again, I think he's a great person from what I know of him. Again, I don't know him personally. I think he does do a lot of good things with charity, and he does a lot of things with the arts, because obviously that's important to him being a musician. And he seems like a really nice, humble guy. But like, no one is ever asking him all of these things, because like, I don't know, just the way we treat men and the way it just bothers people so much that a female is this successful that they like want to do her, you know, downfall somehow. It's the reason people all, you know, used to get off on, you know, Lindsay Lohan's downfall and Britney Spears' downfall. Like, we just love when a woman like we can
has a mental breakdown.
Yeah, build them up. But yeah, anyways, just me getting on my soapbox about the huge about how I don't understand. But yeah, anyways, I don't know. That may have been like too political or whatever, but those are my thoughts. Also register to vote though if you haven't. And
yeah, register to vote. And over here in at Hate Spinnerbait, we are coconut brained, as my husband calls it. We are coconut pilled. We're ready for Kamala.
We love coconuts.
We love coconuts. We're here for it.
I truly do enjoy a good beverage with a coconut. Maybe there'll be some coconut in my Brink drink. Who knows?
Ooh. Who's to say? Are we each making our own Brink drink, or are we like collaborating?
I don't know. What do you think's better? Do you think we should like both bring one to the table and be like, ooh, I mean, we won't get to like taste test it, obviously, the other person.
I know.
So that's kind of like the only thing that sucks. I'm like, maybe we should make the same one. So that way, like, we both are like, oh, yes, I know how this tastes. But I was like, it would be fun to see, like, what each other person comes up with. But I don't know if that works when you're, like, not physically with someone.
Yeah. I guess we could just compare based on ingredients. Although, I'm not going to lie to you. I have no idea how to make a drink. I'm a waitress.
We'll figure something out. I'll concoct something, and I'll tell you what I'm making. And you can follow that if you want, and we'll go from there, you know?
Okay.
Also, you know what I'd really like to do? And then I swear, y'all, we're going to get into the moon and more. But I've seen online where people get together, and they, like, do, like, the heirs, like, an heirs party.
Ooh.
And I'd really like to get, like, a bunch of my Swifties together. Like, we'll find, I don't know, some middle grounds to meet up, just like stay in a hotel room or something. Like, we don't have to go anywhere, we don't have to do anything, but basically you have a slumber party where you like dress in comfy clothes, but the era, and you make like a board of some kind, like treats or like a cheese board or whatever, but like to the theme of your era. And I want to do it so badly.
I would love to do that. I have literally no local friends, none whatsoever.
Like, so you just, we'll find a halfway bar.
Yeah. I mean, I'll drive to Savannah's only 2 hours from me.
Yeah, like, it's really, honestly, we're very close.
Yeah.
Just have a little girl tonight. Just have a little air moment.
Although I will tell you that me and Andrew are planning a move next June.
Like this upcoming June?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
This upcoming June. And we, you know, as I've said in this podcast, have been like all gung-ho to go back to Orlando.
Yeah.
But circumstances have changed. Things have changed. And now we are pretty set on Durham.
Ooh, so I love North Carolina.
I know.
That's also not like, that far for me.
When he went there, like a month ago, all I could talk about was the library. And then he sent me like a Snapchat of them driving by the library. And I was like, oh, it's better than I imagined.
You're going to be like in Sarah's, you could be like basically her neighbor. That's fantastic.
I hope she doesn't think that for you.
No, I don't think so. I think she would be very happy to have you local-ish. Very, very close to our base. They're all, it's the triangle. They're all very close with each other. Yeah. God, I love North Carolina so much. My dream was to always live there. And then I realized how far it would be for football season and like seeing my parents on an easier drive. And I was like, I'll move to Georgia instead.
Yeah.
Which I love. And I'm very happy with that. Was absolutely no shade to where I live. But yes, North Carolina has a very special place in my heart for sure. Well, sure. Okay, I love this. Oh, definitely. That'd be great.
Yeah.
And I see like you and I could see Kristen and then just like,
yes.
Like a lovely little trip. We love that. We love that. All right. I guess we should probably talk about the moon more now. Sorry, y'all, that this kind of turned into like
mini
we
chaos.
Didn't have chaos last week. And I just had some things that I had to get out clearly about. Yes. I don't know, people are just expecting too much out of Taylor Swift. But also, if you'd like to join Swifty for Harris, you can donate $13 to the campaign. You can make some friendship bracelets and a coconut drink. Okay.
Hell yeah.
That is all. Right. Chapter 12. There's some. Okay. Can I just say, we discussed last episode about how Theo was starting to kind of give us the ick and like we were kind of concerned. And then in the chapters that we read tonight, there's definitely some more warning signs, I feel like. Like, there's a couple of cute things and then mostly warning signs.
I am, like, so sketched out by this, by him. You know what this is, like, reminiscent of? Remember, like, in the early Destin books, we were always, like, one of our catchphrases was, like, run. Because run. All the boys were, like, red flags, red flags. But then we had, like, a string of books where the love interest is, like, 10 out of 10, dreamy.
Yes.
But now we're back kind of to this, like, run. Not really sure about this love interest.
I might run from this guy. I'm not going to lie. I might run.
His optimism is annoying.
To be honest. And I'm saying that as a very optimistic person. Yes. Y'all. Like, I am. And we clearly don't hate optimistic people. Like, we love Deb. But her optimism was endearing. His is like... And also just like, it's like for 100, I don't know.
You know what the difference is yes. It's steeped in privilege. Like, we find out in this chapter, like, he has very wealthy parents. He went to private school his whole life. He has, like, no thought at all to being like, Emmeline, you should just take out a bunch of student loans to pay for an Ivy League school. And he's like,
education is debt. And I'm like, my dude says you because you're privileged.
Yeah, exactly. Like, because you don't understand the concept of, like, money, really. Like, he's drinks red wine. He's fucking 21. Yeah. Like, it's just, yeah, his is like that student privilege.
Red flag to me, the red wine. I was like, oh, he's one of those guys.
Yeah. He probably really likes Fight Club.
Yes, I bet you he does. And you know what we say to that, ladies? Run. Okay. So yes. That just basically takes us into the beginning of chapter 12. Recap real quick. Emmeline, or sometimes we call her Emmeline. She's great. She lives in Colby. It's a small town. Her father is in town. She's kind of been watching her little brother. Ivy and Theo are in town because they're working on a documentary. I don't know if you've heard of her. She directed Cooper's Way. And very
masterpiece.
Masterpiece from what I've heard. It was at Tribeca. So they've gotten in touch with Clyde. They've had a little interview. Clyde's not really feeling it. I can't blame him. And she broke up with Luke, which is her, like, small town boyfriend, because he cheated on her with a girl and he took her to Tally Ho. No to Tally Ho. So now that basically brings us up to date with where we are. That's what she missed on Glee. She kissed this guy, Theo. They were having, like, a waiting period to see. She's like, oh, my God, I just, like, got a long-term relationship. So they waited, like, a whole 12 hours, if that. And now they're kind of together. And so that leads us into chapter 12, which is they're going on their first official, their best first true date ever. Essentially, which she says Theo is really into, like, coining terms for everything that they do. It's like the big club kiss and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So he's walking around because it's a surprise, which, again, it's like, my dude. I literally talked about this today. My biggest pet peeve is when someone explains something to me that I already know. Like, I was saying, like, I hate when people tell me something like my dog does. I'm like, yeah, I'm aware. I'm with her all the time. Or, like, something about, like, my family. And I'm like, yeah. Like, but they're not telling you. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, there's one thing to be like, oh, my God, like, I didn't, like, your dad, like, does this, and that's really funny. And you're like, oh, yeah, he does this all the time. It's when someone tells you, like, you are not aware of it. And it's like, yeah, he's my father. Why would I not? Of course I know that. He's my blood relative. He's the reason I'm alive. Really my mom. But he, like, played a role.
True. He was crucial in the whole thing.
He was crucial in it. Like, that kind of stuff drives me crazy. And people do it all the time to me about, like, growing up in Florida. And I'm like, yeah, I'm from here. Like, are you telling me something about, like, my hometown? Like, okay. Right. Like, I don't know. This guy is giving that energy. And it's such a New York thing to do. He is, like, taking her around Colby. And he's like, it's a surprise. I was like, what's going to be a surprise to her? She knows every nook and cranny of this little beach town, my dude. But, like, I get that he's, like, trying to be sweet and romantic and whatnot, but I'm like, but he does it in a way that isn't like, I'm sure you know this place, but, like, he's always like, I found this place. Like, she talks about how, you know, they went out to eat somewhere and he's like, it's just a real hole in the wall. And she's like, I'd been there before. I'd been there actually on a date with Luke. So it's a little awkward. So she talks about how, like, everywhere they go is tinged with a little bit of awkwardness. So they're basically out on like a completely like, it's essentially like a dock almost. Or what once was a dock. We learned basically that it was like part of a house that was swept away in a really bad no-name storm, which is always the ones that get you worse than the ones that they're like, batten down the hatches, that's coming. It's always like some freaking no-name storm comes in. And absolutely, and I guess maybe it's because you're not prepared for it. I don't know, but they always seem to. So anyways, so she's like, this is actually awkward because someone
Okay, I think.
Okay, we're good. We both had audio issues at the exact same time. That was great.
Yes.
I love that for us.
Wonderful.
So, so yeah, so this is a place where literally someone lost their house in their life. So he's like, what a great, yeah, nice little romantic place. And she's like, this is actually kind of awkward and maybe a little bit borderline disrespectful, but he doesn't know. So she's like, well, I can't really hold it against him. He's not really like aware of that. But so there they are. And this is where he pulls out the red wine, which is like, ugh.
Right, like she's 18, dude. Like,
just, yeah, like come on, that's not. And she says it. She's like, I'm used to like watered down keg beer, and like this is a much fancier palate. And this is where he talks about. He's like, I brought cocktail food, and she's like, I have no idea what that is. He explains that his parents, that's what they called it. Every night between 5 and 6, they would have martinis, olives, and either herring or salmon dip with rice crackers. Which also, like, every night. They just like went, let's go to our study, dear. Return to the parlor with our martini. Like,
I know.
A martini every, like, what?
And rich people.
Rich people. Rich people. They have a drawing room, certain of it. Verily. For sure. Verily. I was about to say very Emily and Richard Gilmore of them. And instead, I mushed into one word as verily. So, yes, very like Emily and Richard Gilmore of them. So.
Yeah.
He's like, don't worry, I didn't bring anything like that. Like, I know that that would probably be too refined for your palate, which is like a little bit of a dick thing to say. He doesn't say exactly like that, but that's what he infers, right? He's like, I know it's not exactly for everyone. It's like, well, yeah, only for old rich people. So she talks about how he'd grown up in both New York and Connecticut. His father was a psychiatrist. His mother is an editor of a publishing house that specialized in travel and art books. It seems like they had him a little later in life. Of course, that's the exact opposite of Emmeline's story, which is she was right after high school with her mom. Her mom's much younger. His parents were a little older, and they didn't have a television, no junk food. Again, Benji and Theo are definitely giving Auden vibes, and I kind of like that about this book, that like Sarah swapped it. Like in that one in Colby, she was like, we're going to send this person who's really sheltered and have a childhood, and now we're seeing it from the other side. Like, what if someone that like had the most normal average childhood met people that didn't, kind of thing? So it's interesting how it's like very similar to Along for the Ride, but also vastly different.
Yeah.
The gas grow, for instance, is mentioned. I was like, ooh, a whole cheese doodles pack a good snack bang. Am I right?
Snack bang.
And he has never had it. When she pulled up to Sand Dollars, he was like, is that your dinner? And she's like, oh no, it's just a little sneaky snack. And he's like, I've never had it. And he's like, oh, it's kind of weird. Why is it so orange? And it's like, oh, whatever. Go back to Connecticut. I'm sure people from Connecticut are lovely. I'd love to go someday. Never been. But anyways, so she's just like, oh, okay. And then when he brings out the snacks and apps, he's like, oh, these are all from the Reef Room. We have wasabi peas and peanut mix, shrimp puffs, and your favorite, the chicken saute, which is not her favorite. She's like, I'm actually more of a shrimp burger person. I can't, like, don't be telling people things about themselves. You don't know her, dude.
Right.
Stop. Like,
right. Right.
So that's, ugh. So he's like, oh, and she's like, oh, okay, looks great. She tries like the wasabi pea, and she's like, oh my god, and tries to down it with some wine, and she's like, well,
yeah.
Although she says the wine is growing on her, and I was like, oh, it's probably because you've had a few sips. So at a certain point, anything, you know, tastes good when she gets that buzz going.
If I may,
yes,
break it down. One thing that I did, it's like so tricky because it's like, I hate this and I love this, but she says about him here on 248, he didn't play it cool. He didn't play it anything. He just was, and it made me want to be too, even if I sometimes felt a bit guilty doing it. And that is in reference to them having a romantic date on somebody's like grave. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think the other thing with Goodness gracious.
Ooh.
That was a noise. The other thing with Theo is, like, she's always comparing him to Luke. Like, she says, like, you know, after, you know, Luke was terrible at, he couldn't even remember birthdays, which is, like, bro, seriously? She finds it adorable that he, like, names everything.
Yeah.
And I think, like, a lot of this relationship too is her just being like, it's a rebound, you know, like, yeah, she's fully rebounding. Like, she's like, okay, someone completely opposite than him, he's giving me attention, like, let's do it.
Yeah, she seems, I mean, earlier in the novel she discussed about how she's jealous of the tourists sometimes because they get to come in, they have their summer flings, and they leave, right? And I was like, is that what she's like trying to do? But I also feel like she's like, I feel like they're both seem to be taking it more seriously than that. Cause if I was like, hey, like, you want to like flirt with them over the summer, sure, whatever, no harm, no foul. But yeah, I think she definitely jumped into this relationship a little bit fast. And there are just some, like, obviously there's something wrong with being different than someone. Like, I think that can be really refreshing and good for you, but he's like different. And yeah, like, I don't know, like a pretentious, privileged way. And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
If that's like the best fit, to be honest.
Yeah.
But yeah. Alas.
Yeah. That's a oh God. I have a big problem with rich people, and I really need to, I was just going to say I need to work that out, but like, do I?
I don't think you really do.
No. It's like men. Like, I don't trust men until they prove them. Like, men are guilty until proven innocent for me.
Yeah.
And it's the same with rich people.
Yeah.
It's like, prove to me that you're not just some guy.
I'm sure that there are some rich people that are lovely, but overall, yes, like as a clump of people, not to generalize, because I'm usually not into generalizing groups of people by one trait, but in this case, I'm A-okay with it. I'm like, yes, I'm going to generalize that you're probably a terrible person until, yeah, like you prove me wrong, which right. I hope that of you, I hope, and I will be nothing but respectful to you, to your face, but deep down, just so you know, I'm like, okay, rich people.
I'm like, oh, that's an interesting way to look at the world.
Can't relate, but that's certainly an interesting way. This conversation that they have, like, coming up, which is about her father. Well, he, of course, he confuses her dad with her father, and he's like, similar words, and she's like, not in this case, like, not really. Like, the relationship I have with my dad and the relationship I have with my father are totally different. And it's like, yeah, right on. So she ends up kind of getting, he wants to hear about her father, essentially. She's like, it's a long story, and she doesn't really want to talk about it, it sounds like, which is fair. Like, she's on basically a first date with someone. Like, you don't want to, like, bring up all your trauma. Like, you don't want to trauma dump on someone on the first date. And I respect that about her. So they're kind of talking about, this conversation is where it gets very, like, rich people to me. So she's saying, like, you know, I got into Colombia, and he is, like, really taken aback by that. He's like, you got into Colombia? And she's like, I don't know if I should be offended by how surprised he is. And
you should.
And I was like, you should, girl, for sure. That's a red flag sign. And so she explains, like, yeah, he promised to pay for it, and then he wasn't able to. And then, like, things got weird. Like, he didn't explain why he couldn't. He, you know, he's the reason that I applied to freaking school, and then he just, like, ghosts me. And so she explains, you know, that, like, well, my dad's a contractor, and Ishu gave a full scholarship, so it made more sense to go there. And this is where he, like, talks 100%. About, like, you know, debt is going into debt for education. It's just, like, what you do, and you should go there. And this is where we also find out that, like, Columbia was his first pick, which is why he's kind of butthurt that, like, she got in and, like, didn't immediately, like, you know, try to do everything in her power to go there, which it kind of comes out here that, like, she wasn't really that interested. Like, it wasn't really her dream. But I think it was just something that was kind of put upon by her dad, who, again, is also kind of, like, rich, pretentious person. And he's just like, you know, it's just a completely different caliber of conversation, completely different caliber of education. And this is my biggest pet peeve of all, y'all. Mm-hmm. And Michael Ann and I, obviously, like, we've discussed our education before. Also, going into debt for education is bullshit, and we shouldn't have to do it. Free education for the people. But, you know, Michael Ann went to a Catholic school, a private Catholic school for high school, which was a time. We don't have time to unpack all that. I went to public school. I don't think that there is inherently anything wrong with either or, but I do absolutely get really, really riled up when people act like going to an Ivy League school or going to private school or doing that is like the only way you can be smart and the only way that you like it. It's such a status symbol to me, like private schools and, you know, Ivy Leagues. And again, there's nothing inherently wrong with going to Ivy Leagues. Like, we all watched Legally Blonde. We all wanted to go to Harvard Law for a minute, y'all. Like, don't act like you didn't. But yep. Then we woke up and realized that's really unattainable. There's nothing wrong with any of those. But when people have that air to them of like, oh, when you belittle someone for where they went, at the end of the day, an education is an education. Like, you're going to end
right.
And, cheapest you can get it and the best way you can get it for you, I'm all for. But yeah, I've never had that much of a thing. Like, I guess the circles I ran in growing up, that wasn't such a big thing. But since moving here, like, private school over public school is like a big conversation. And again, I think there are pros and cons to both, by all means, and do whatever's right for you and your family. But as someone who went to public school, and I think I'm okay. Like, I think I turned out okay. My whole family went to public school. My mom taught public school for over 30 years. Big fuck you to anyone who thinks that you are better than someone because you didn't go to public school. Like, nothing grates on my nerves more.
Yes.
Nothing.
But yeah. Also, like, that just opens up another conversation, too, of, like, are private schools teaching in a better manner, like just resources wise, like not right. intelligence wise, but like, you know, private schools, like how much do those teachers get to like stock their classroom right. and like what kind of books are they getting for their kids?
The resources, yeah.
Yeah.
The resources that they have, the class sizes that they have. And I think a lot of it too is networking. Like, oh, you went to such and such preparatory school where so-and-so went, like, it helps. And there, again, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, that's why a lot of people join Greek life when they go to college. Right. Networking is great. That is what's going to get you the foot in the door a lot of places. But yeah. Like, there's a lot of pros to it. And for people that can afford it, like, absolutely, like, go for it. Like, again, I don't think that there's anything inherently wrong with private school, but I think it's also another class divide. It's another system that's going against people that some people, because they can afford this, get better resources and get better this, better that, than the poor public school teacher who's, like, putting pennies together an Amazon wish list to, like, stock their classroom.
Yeah. And like have 87 students in one class. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot. So that's a whole conversation for another day. But this like probably just this elitist. Yeah. Cause I could go. But yeah, just this like elitist attitude of like, you know, like ESU isn't as good. And it's like she's going there for free. She's going to get a college degree without student debt. That is awesome. Do it. Like, do you know how many, like, that, again, that's another, like, if you can do that, you're very fortunate to be able to, like, that is great. And, like, she's clearly very smart, and it wasn't her dream to go to Columbia. She was doing it to make some kind of false connection with her father, essentially, you know? And it's just, like, but, yeah, she says here, like, this is the biggest, like, run, girl. On the top of 254, she says, here I was sitting on the remains of someone's house, drinking wine I didn't like, with food I could barely tolerate, while rehashing the worst part of the past year. There are just moments when you look up from any one place and realize suddenly you have no idea how you got there. And it's like, yeah, she basically is like, this is terrible. And I'm like, oh, run. I don't know if this is great. This is the first date. And then he's like, oh, this is our first fight. And she's like, are we fighting? And he's like, well, I offended you. And I'm like, well, at least he realizes that, but still. And then he's like, I'm sorry, Emmeline, just education is a big deal in my family. It arouses passions. And I was like, education is, education is a big deal in my family for sure too. And I hope in most places, again, I'm like a real pro, knowledge is power, y'all. But I was just like, okay, well, that doesn't mean you have to be an elitist about it. And then I did love her response, but she was joking, but I'm not joking when I say that my family feels that way about college football.
Like, yep. Yeah.
I love that line. I was like, same. Girl, same. She's like, I was joking. And I was like, I'm not. We are very passionate about college football. Very passionate. So this is where he's like, you know, NYU technically was my backup school. Can you imagine NYU being your backup school? I was wow, real first world problems, my dude. And so he's like, so I can't imagine, you know, doing all that work and getting into Columbia and not like doing whatever it takes to get in. And it's like, yeah, if it was her dream school, but it's not. Like, to her, like, that wasn't the thing, you know? And so she's just like, okay, you know, whatever. And he agrees that, you know, it's a big promise to break. And then he says, you know, like, did he ever explain why? And she's like, no, but I know now that his marriage is falling apart. So I assume that has to be the reason. But he never really, like, expressed that to me, you know, like, clearly. And he's like, he's probably embarrassed. And she's like, how do you figure? And he's like, well, he doesn't have a good track record. Like, he wasn't ever able to be there for you. This was the one thing he thought he could do to kind of get back in your good graces. And it fell through. And so she thinks, like, you know, it wasn't my dream. And she's like, honestly, like, it would have been fine. Like, if he just would have talked to me, if he would have shown, like, I think what upsets her way more is that he ghosted her and he didn't show up for graduation. That is way more upsetting to her than him not being able to afford Columbia for her, you know? And, but again, because they come from a different world, they come from a privileged world, they come from a world of money, Theo sees it in the way I think her dad sees it, which he is embarrassed. I think he was like, oh God, like, I promised her this and now I can't come through and now I can't show face to her because I've let her down once again. And it's like, you being there is way more what she wants than you showing you love her through money. But, you know. Yeah.
Theo and her dad kind of have the same issue with her too, is like, are you asking Emmeline what she wants, or are you assuming that what you want is what she wants? Because, like, she didn't want to go to Columbia, but dad was pushing it because, like, you know, whatever the fuck. And Theo, like, brought her to this creepy place that he thinks is romantic, but he should have asked, and bought all this food she doesn't actually like. And it's like, well, did he ask her? Like, did he ask her, like, hey, do you like red wine? Hey, are you big into shrimp puffs? Like, it's, they're, both of them are just thinking about them. Like, and she said, and he says here too, bottom line is that as humans, we are by nature selfish creatures. The only way we care about anything really is by making it about us. Look, I'm not saying he handled the whole thing well. I'm just saying maybe there is more to it than you think. And, like, yeah, I guess you can have that insight of, like, well, he's probably embarrassed because he promised this to you and he couldn't give it to you, so he's, like, hiding from you. And it's like, okay, like, that's an explanation, I guess, but that's not, like, an excuse. That's not, like, gonna make me, like, reach out and put in the effort, especially because Emmeline, child, father, right. Adult. Like,
adult parent.
And, like, as you said, like, okay, he's embarrassed he couldn't pay for Columbia. Like, well, why doesn't he just actively be involved in her life more?
Mm-hmm.
But no, instead he just ghosts her and makes her feel like shit. And it's just like, these two boys.
But I think you hit the nail on the head with that. Like, no one asks her what she wants. They just decide what's best for her. And it's like, does she not get any say in her own life? Like, even as silly as it is, a date. Yeah. Like, if you really want it to be the best big, you know, first date ever. And I'm all for surprises. Don't get me wrong. But, like, ask her what she would want to do. Like, get intel and then surprise her with something that, you know, she would like. Like, not whatever the hell this first date
is. Yeah. This is rough.
Ugh. So, yeah. And kind of, this is where he apologizes for his optimism being annoying. And she's like, oh, you know, I had a flash of Benji with he's hard to entertain, which I then think makes her, like, kind of soften on him, even though I don't think she probably should have in this instance. And she thinks about how they both kind of had the same, like, upbringing. Like, Benji, again, didn't really have a childhood. It sounds like Theo didn't really have a childhood. And she's like, oh, it's not annoying, just different, like the cheese doodle thing. And so he comes over and they have a little toast to optimism and junk food. Which, you know, yeah, so that kind of ends that little disaster of a date, in my humble opinion. Mm-hmm. We flash forward to the next morning. She wakes up on a Saturday far too early because she hears someone moving furniture. She tries to open her bedroom door and she can't because the furniture is literally in her like hallway in front of her door. And so it's all there. And she's like, what the F? So she calls out, no one answers. And this is where she ends up literally having to climb out her own bedroom window to get back into her room. And everyone, her mom is like, when she gets back into the house, her mom basically, which her one neighbor is like watching the whole thing, which is just a very funny visual. She scares like the crap out of her mom. And she's like, what are you doing? And she's like, the window was the only way out. Okay. Like I was barricaded in my room. What'd you expect from me? Morris, of all people, our boy, is surprisingly there. And she's like, hi, you know, can you please just let me in? So she's like, what's going on? And her mom's like, oh, like your dad probably thought you're already gone. And I like her, my car is here. Hello, how could I have been gone? She's like, it's not even 8 on a Saturday. Like, are you kidding me? And so her mom's like, and listen, this isn't like my issue. Take it up with your dad if you have issues with this. And so Morris makes fun of her BJs, which is kind of funny. And then he's like, oh, did you sleep in the grass? And that's when she looks down, that she has like grass clippings all over from like falling out the window. And so she learns that they're doing the floors and she's just like, I wasn't aware of this. And this is when her mom's kind of like, well, you haven't been around a lot recently. So, you know, and she's also like, I don't understand why dad always has to do things. And so her mom's like, Don Quixote had windmills. The Wright brothers had the sky. Your dad has home improvement. And so, yeah, just it's never going to be good enough. She's like, you see a good dining room. Your dad sees a way he can make it great. Like, this is just his thing. We let him do it. It's whatever. And so they end up sneaking into Amber's room. Which then, of course, Amber is like, how do you like them apples? Oh, see, now you won't be so mean to me when we try to sneak into your room. I love that they just come in with coffee, literally get in bed right next to her. Don't even offer her. And again, it's like 7:30 on a Saturday morning. And they just start having a little convo. And I was like, I love this. Like, no consideration. And she just like jumps in. And so, yeah, so they're talking about Theo. And again, it just like doesn't sound like people are like that excited about him. And I mean, some of it is Theo. And I think some of it is her mom is getting that like, oh, my God, my baby's about to go off to college kind of, you know, vibes, which is understandable as, you know, a family that is very close. And so she says that, you know, that I like this part. She's they're talking about, so like Amber and Emmeline are kind of like fighting back and forth. And so they're like, oh, you didn't have this much of an issue when Margot left. And her mom responds, but I gained 15 pounds. Like, are you kidding me? And I kind of like forgot about her Trix bar habit, honestly. And she's like, you know, it's not fair of you to make me feel bad for going to school. You would kill me if I hadn't gone. And so Amber points out, says the smart one in the favorite. And her mom says, I have no favorites. My mom said another one of her mantras. And this whole scene is just so sisterhood to me because this is literally the crap that my sisters and I do. Like, all the time. We'll just be like, well, because your favorite child came into town. So we got her favorite snack or whatever. And I was like, oh, my God, I don't have a favorite. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, well, you do. You know, whatever. And we just do this too. Like, we just rag on each other in a loving way all the time.
Yes. Yeah.
All the time. And I was like, you don't have a favorite. Stop saying I don't have a favorite. You know this. I'm like, mm-hmm, sure. So, yes, this is where her mom admits, like, you know, you're my baby and you're going off to college. And I'm just, like, really going to miss you. And this is where we also find out the tea that Luke apparently has a new girlfriend already. Both these people just jumping right in with the next love interest. My goodness. Slow down, y'all. And so, of course, Emmeline's like, what's the tea? And Amber's like, oh, you can look up her and my, I almost said my Facebook, in my yearbook. My Facebook. Which again, I love that, like, this is what they're doing. I'm like, y'all aren't going to, like, look her up on, like, Instagram. And I'm just like, you can look her in the yearbook. So she's like, oh, she was, like, my year. And, so, yeah, so they're, you know, she's like, whatever. And she's like, no, I don't want to do that. And this is where we learn that Amber, like, has a lot of enemies and she defaces their picture in the yearbook, which I love that for her, honestly.
Me too.
So good. And, yeah, so they just, like, have a little moment. They repeat the to the moon and more mantra. Mom's in her feels. Her baby's about to go off to college. We get it. And, yeah, down the hall, dad's just working on those bare floors. Morris is with him, again, shockingly, up bright and early on a Saturday morning, helping out, bless him. And Yeah. So she says, you know, then again, I just see a windmill and an open sky too, never feeling the need to conquer either. You think it's all obvious and straightforward, this world, but really it's all in who is doing the looking.
Right on. Absolutely.
Some classic Dessen insight. And we love that.
Woman knows how to wrap up a goddamn chapter. Like, am I right? Like, every time. So good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She knows what she's doing. That is for sure.
For sure. Chapter 13. Chapter baby. 13.
Speaking of 13, we still don't have Rep TV.
Oh my God. But seriously, when is it coming? I'm always on the phone. Okay. Quickly on the Rep TV front. So the Olympics use Ready For It. I also learned today that not a lot of people have ever watched an Olympic opening ceremony in their life, and that baffles me.
I have,
but I digress. What? Because I was trying to say how this one was really weird in comparison to the whole boat parade thing and how I didn't like it, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, no one has anything to compare it to, so I couldn't get into it. But anyways, I digress. Y'all should watch more opening ceremonies. Okay, they're very, like, Michael Ann, you literally would get such a kick out of it because your biggest thing is watching someone living their dream. And it is, yes, like, it is so emotional. Like, because again, like, obviously, like, people, like, someone like LeBron James, that's not, like, cool. Because it's, like, he's LeBron James and he's used to accolades and winning things. But when you are the sole representative from your country and you have worked so hard and you are the only person in the parade walking in and you're carrying your flag and an entire stadium is cheering for you, there's no way you're not crying through that. It is beautiful. And, like, this poor person's not going to medal. You know what I mean? Like, very unlikely that they're going to medal. Like, this is their moment, is getting to, like, walk in the opening ceremony. I'm joking. It's going to be so choked up now.
Crying.
But it is honestly great. And usually it's, like, a little weird. Like, the entertainment portion is always a little weird, but it's, like, to represent wherever it's at. But this year was wild. But that's not even what I was trying to talk about, y'all. What I was trying to talk about is how they use Ready For It for the promo on NBC for the U.S. team. And when it started, it was like, is this Taylor's version? Because it is clearly not the version that is on OG, Stolen Reputation. And no, it's definitely the live version. Like, as it started going on, I was like, oh, this is from the live. I just think this is from the tour. And then at the end, it's yeah, like, from the tour. But I was like, for a hot second, I thought we were, I was down to clown. I was like, freaking Olympics is announcing. Like, I was like, holy crap. But no, no, it was not that. It could have been. It could have been.
It could have been. I know. I just, there was like another clowning situation happening this weekend with the shows. Nothing happened. Like, I'm just like, I think something will happen, whether it's Rep TV or not, in London. Like, I do think she's circling back to London. Something's going to happen there, but.
I agree. I don't know.
Maybe not.
Well, yeah, we'll find out what. All right. Chapter 13. Hit it.
So we are in the rental house that Ivy and Theo are in, and Clyde is there. And he is just, like, hella distracted by the mansion. Like, this is a mansion. There's shit everywhere. Like, expensive stuff everywhere. He's like, holy crap. Like, I can't believe this is granite. Look at these windows. Blah, blah, blah. And Emmeline flashes back to earlier in the day where she was like, it's not a good idea for Clyde to come here. And he's like, why? And she's like, this is a mansion. And he's like, do you think so? She's like, you don't? And he's like, it's a rental house. I mean, it's nice, but it's not a Central Park penthouse. Sir.
Do you
get your head out of your ass?
Beachfront property? My dude, that is expensive. Sure, in the state of North Carolina, it's cheaper than in other places. But it ain't cheap.
I mean, maybe. Like, shit.
The cost just to insure that thing? It's insane.
Right. Right. And like, this is a genuine mansion. Like, it doesn't have like 3 floors and like 14 rooms.
Yes. It's biggest, newest rental property. It's their fancy. It's a VIP. It's a VIP house.
It's a VIP house. And he's just like, oh yeah, I guess like it's cool. It's like, what the hell does your house look like, bro? Oh my God.
Yeah, seriously. It's a house. I was like, okay, sir.
But he's like, oh, well, he was in New York, so, like, he knows things. He's seen fancy things. Like, this isn't going to be, like, no big deal. And she was like, okay, sure. And then, of course, fast forward, and the house is, in fact, a distraction, like she said. But Ivy's had enough. He starts talking about the windows, and she's like, we get it. The house is grand, entirely excessive. We are offensive for living in it. Can we talk about your work now? And this kind of takes Clyde by surprise. And Emma Lyon's expecting him to get up and leave, or at least fire back. But he's just like, you think I'm saying you're offensive? And she's like, I think that considering how much you talk about wasting money, you have absolutely no problem with wasting time, especially mine. And this is like the only time where I'm like, you know what? Yeah. Good one, Ivy, truly. Like, it's kind of funny that
he just like snaps. And it like, yes. It's like part of her, I'm like, she's not wrong. But also I was like, I would never be so bold.
Yes.
But he like respects it, which is great. Yes, it worked out for him in the end.
Yeah, he respects it. He's like, okay, well, let's do it. Tell me what you want to know right now. Tell me. And so then they actually start like,
which honestly, interviewing like, him. Is the way to do it. Like, what is all this tiptoeing and whatever and being like, he's not someone who wants to be fawned over. And so in a sense, like them being like, whatever you want to do, whatever you want to do, da, da, da. And he's like, oh, stop. Like, whatever. But just being a straight shooter and being like, look, this is what we want to talk about. This is what we want to know. Is like, I feel like way more Clyde's speed, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so she's like, why did you leave New York? Like, she gets right into it. Why did you leave New York? And he basically explains that, like, he sold a painting or a painting for $500,000. And it just made him kind of be like, what the fuck? Like, what is this world I'm in? Who are these people I'm surrounded by? Why am I making this kind of money off of, like, ground shells, plaster, and tubes of paint? This is crazy. And she's like, yeah, but, you know, it was the centerpiece of your first show. Like, it put you officially on the map, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, you're not answering my question. Or, yeah, he says, do you think that's worth $500,000? And he's like, you're not answering my question. And she's like, I don't understand it. And that's so
in her mind, like, that probably isn't a lot of money. You know what I mean? She's like, oh yeah, like whatever. But like to someone like Clyde, to someone like me, I'd be like, that is a life-changing money.
Yeah. That would be insane if I got $500,000. Like, the things I would do. Oh my God.
Game changer.
Pay my friends' bills for sure. Yes. So then this is where Clyde explains, like, he comes from a family that worked on a farm. His dad made $30,000 one year, and that was a good year for him, which is crazy. Oh my God. And she's just like, it felt like it was an insult to him that it was an insult to Clyde's dad that he made so much money off of a painting. And he felt like he was an insult to him. And, you know, she's like, but you're his son, like you're getting paid for this, like he should be proud or whatever. And Emmeline in her head is like, nope, that's not what it's like here. And Clyde says the same thing. He's like, if I stayed in New York and lived that life, making that kind of money, from then on, I knew I'd become an asshole. But turning away and coming here, that made me one too. I couldn't win. But she says, hold on a second. Yeah. Yeah. Emmeline in her head here is like, no matter how proud they were, that much money would change the balance, not only affecting how they viewed me, but also making them assume I viewed them differently as well. And like, it's kind of sad, honestly. Like,
yeah, that is sad.
I think if my, I mean, I'm not from a small town. I'm not one of these people. So I can't really relate or like give my feedback. But if I had a kid that sold one painting for $500,000, I would be like, hell yeah, keep making those paintings. Go, yeah, go, go. Like,
oh, that, like, I feel like her parents are good people. And I feel like if she went off and made herself successful, they would be happy for her and proud. Like, I think you should always want your kids to do better than you do. And I get where Clyde is coming from. I get that being like, yeah, my dad busted his ass and this didn't take any effort. And these hoity-toity people are willing to pay me this money. Like, I could see that being like a really hard thing
to wrap around. Like, if you come from that kind of poverty and whatever, which again is why I don't think that there's any such thing as unskilled labor, and I think federal minimum wage should be a thing, and the jobs that we look down on the most are often the most taxing hard jobs that should get paid a lot more money. But I digress. Yes. But I also think, at least for Emmeline's case, I'm like, no, I think your parents want you to better yourself. I think they want you to go out and do well. Like, I can't imagine my parents ever being like, we are so mad at you for going out and being successful. Like, I can't fathom that.
I, like, have to assume, like, how old do you think Clyde is? Like, 40?
Maybe a little older. I pictured him, like, late. They mention it at one point, like, what year he was born.
Oh, 1969.
Born, school, right?
Yeah.
So, in 2013's time, math is
modern. So, if you think about it that way, though, like, he's technically a boomer. So yeah,
he's from a different, like, generation.
Yeah, so. His parents are from the silent generation. Like, that generation, we think boomers are fucked up. Those people, oh my God. So, you know, they have, like, a totally different mindset. He's just, like, the simple farmer. Oh. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, like, that's what it's like there in this little small southern town. And I don't get it, but apparently that's why he left.
Yeah.
Which is sad. It's really sad.
And also him being like, I felt like I couldn't win either way. And it's like, yeah, like, yeah. I feel like he was stuck between a rock and a hard place. Like, if he was going to stay in New York, then he becomes this hoity-toity rich person when his dad's doing backbreaking labor. But if he comes back, it's like, well, what you doing here? How's that any better? How's that going to help anything? And it's like,
and, right.
But yeah, but he does come back. And I like that he's like, yeah, and I'm such an asshole.
Yeah.
Which, like, he kind of is, but, like, a lovable one. And he's done, like, a lot of good things for the community. Like, he's very into, clearly, like, you know, made a bike shop, made a laundromat, did, like, opened up all these businesses and stuff. So we respect that.
Yeah, he definitely cares a lot for Colby, for sure.
Yeah.
But she ends up leaving while they're in, like, the middle of this, and they're talking about his work, his choices, his regrets. She says it's like a collage of words instead of materials. He only spoke to Ivy. He was really focused. Like, the whole vibe of this interview and this documentary has shifted, because now he's like, oh my God, I'm sorry. I'm an asshole. Here we go. Let's do this. So she sneaks out, and when she pulls back up to the office, her father's Subaru is there, which is, like, so funny that he drives a Subaru. Yeah. But
well, love that for him.
So she sneaks in the back because she's like, I don't want to see this guy. And she sneaks into her grandmother's office, and she's trying to hide. She's trying to duck out of sight. She doesn't want him to see her, but who sees her? Margot. And she comes in the room, and she's like, what is with you guys? Like, what is with you? Like, he's not a monster, blah, blah, blah. We find out that Emmeline's mom is – I am very often going between Emmeline and Emmeline. And that's just going to be what it is. And I'm so sorry, y'all. her mother was also hiding from him. And basically, we find out that Benji was given to Morris to go get ice cream, which is, like, this dad is just like, yeah, sure, here, take my kid. I've never met you before.
Pawns this kid off on anyone, I tell you.
I tell you. And the kid was, so Morris went and took him. And she's like, Margo's like, okay, so I need you to keep an eye on Benji and bring him back to North Redomain. When you are done, or when, like, in an hour or so. So Margo and father are going to look at the house because he wants to sell it, blah, blah, blah. So she's like, I also have a job. And Margo's like, this is your job. And he's your brother. And so, you know, she gets stuck with him, basically. She walks outside, and Benji and Morris are just returning. Benji's so excited. He loves his little ice cream. He says, Morris said fudge ripple is obligatory. And she was like, he used the word obligatory. My brother used a really big word when I was home a couple of weeks ago, and I just like looked at him like, who the hell are you?
Who are you?
What was that? He's like, I went to grad school. I'm like, oh, right. You did. Whatever.
You're whatever. Like, but still, you don't use big that. You're like, that was very strange to me.
It was. It was crazy. I was like, Jesus, who are you? Yeah, Morris has a car. He's using the truck. Ivy was like, you can use this truck, which is crazy. Like, people just meet Morris and they just immediately trust him, I guess, because they're like, yeah, but here honestly, you go. Same. Here's my kid. Here's my car. You know, live your life.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Morris refers to Theo as her boyfriend here. And she's like, he's not my boyfriend. And then Benji spills ice cream. He goes inside. And yeah, she's also doing a lot of like Theo and Benji. Like, it's like her sympathy for Benji, she's like kind of attributing to Leo. Theo as well.
Yeah.
And I get that for sure. But I also feel like, I just feel like she's giving Theo like a little too much credit because I don't know. Benji's a child.
Yeah. It's a different circumstance, I feel like.
Yeah. But we find out here that, Benji does in fact know about the divorce because he's not dumb or deaf or blind.
Which
and so she's like, wow, I can't believe he knows. And Morris is like, of course he knows, basically. But Morris said he doesn't seem too upset. And she's like, well, yeah, but you don't really know that. Morris gives some like child of divorce advice where he's like, staying together isn't always better. Like he might be happier that they're splitting up, you know, if they fight a lot, if the household is toxic. Right. And we kind of find out here too that like Morris hasn't really elaborated on what went down with his parents. Like, they used to have a good amount of money. They own their own house. They hung out with his dad's extended family a lot. But he just never brings it up. He doesn't hang out with them anymore. And she just doesn't ask because she's like sensitive topic. And then she tells him she's going to miss him. And he's like, I'm just going to Gertz. And she was like, oh my God, you know, I meant when I go to college, dum dum. And they decide to go. This was like kind of a thing in this chapter too, is like, she's telling everyone, or the last two chapters, like, she's like telling everyone she like is going to miss them and she loves them basically. And it's very sweet. But Morris decides he's going to drive Benji home. So he gives Emmeline a ride to – where does he give her a ride to?
To the rental house. The rental house that is for sure a mansion.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah, he drops off there. And then when she's walking up to the house, he – calls out to her and he's like, Emmeline, and she's like, yeah, and he's like, you know, I'll miss you too.
Morris,
love our little buddy.
I know, I love him too.
But so when Theo opens the door, she's crying because, you know, she's just feeling a lot of feels today. Today's a big feelings day for her. So that
I love Morris. Everyone deserves a I was just saying that everyone deserves some more. A good egg, a good friend. That's what everyone needs in life.
Yes, 100%. Everybody needs a Morris.
I also love when he talks about Benji and he was like, and she was like, he doesn't even know you. Like, how would you know? And he's like, the safe space of the squeeze serve. I was like, what? Bless him. I love that so much. He's a fantastic little weirdo. We love him.
He is.
We're worried about Theo. We hate rich elitists. And that's pretty much sums up my feelings on those two chapters.
Yeah. Like, the second I read that he was like, you think this is a mansion? I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's enough, actually, out of you. So thank you, sir.
Yes, that is chapters 12 and 13. We'll be back on Thursday with Chaos and a Brink Drink. We're watching Brink, baby.
Brink, baby.
So come on that DCOM, like the OG DCOM. Come on that journey if you so choose. And if not, we'll see you back next week with chapters 14 and 15 of The Moon and More for Destined Tuesdays, as always. And thanks for bearing with us as we got out a little bit of chaos being of this episode. Take care of yourselves, everyone. Be wild times out there. I wish we could ever say that it's not, but apparently,
yeah,
these are the cards we've been dealt, but it just continues to be wild times. So take care of yourselves. And as Morris and Emmeline say to each other, we'll talk later.
Bye.
Bye.